I don't know what it's called order. I don't know to roll call. Liz.
Brandon Badiotti is absent. Jerry V. Miller.
Here.
Chuck Campos is absent. Michael Frederick.
Here.
Larry Goslin.
Here.
William Hoppies.
Here.
Millie Kimbrough is absent. Jennifer Coney.
Here.
Clayton Koopman is absent. Chuck Moore is absent. Jack Norton is absent. Daryl Sweet.
Here.
Karen Sweet.
Here.
Amos White is absent. And Chair Wendy.
And absent means that they called in advance.
Yeah. So we do have a quorum present.
Perfect. Thank you. On to item number two. For 2 minutes, go through DS 14.3 and 28.23. Has everyone had a chance to review those minutes? And are there any comments? Questions?
There's actually three sets of minutes. There's February 2nd and then February 28th, in addition to the January.
Does anybody like to make any changes, sir?
No changes. I move to approve.
Move to approve all three. We're going to give them Frederick's second motion, but you know that for second, like Frederick's to approve all three. Roll call.
Did you say a roll call of the presentation? What is this?
Good question. I guess because no one else is listening in, we don't have anyone attending remotely, I think we would not need to do a roll.
All right.
Unless we want to read.
We'll amend the procedures here ad hoc and in play. All in favor of said motion, please say aye and give a hand movement. All opposed. Passes unanimously. Okay, on to item number four is our open forum. Any member of the public may address the committee on matters.
Can I, we're missing something on the agenda, and that's rearrangement of items. There was a screw up, partially on my fault, with Mr. Farley.
And just I meant to mention at the very beginning of the meeting, there's another meeting in this room at 6, so we have to be out by 5:30. Finish up.
We're motivated.
Any other adjustment to the agenda on the open forum? We'll close item number five, the next executive committee update, and hoping this could be a dialogue as we go through this, because structure, support, strategy, well, our purpose, powers, and duties, you know, tell us what we're supposed to be doing by the you know, the code, and want to us talk about how we're measuring success. I am a believer, as you all sense and know, in the subcommittee structure and the empowerment of the chairs of the subcommittee, such that we're working in alignment with the purpose, powers, and duties more than one go. Just clearly, we're not all going to be unified in our philosophy of where exactly and how, but our goal is, our job here is to. Yeah. It's to be a panel of experts and providing recommendations and to have it flow through. So the subcommittee system I don't think is anywhere near perfect, and it is a work in progress as we go. So we know that. And I also know that putting pen to paper all on the charter, it causes the right discussions to happen. It causes those things to be brought to the forefront. So we can have those discussions. One thing I detest is stagnation, right? Just let's have it go. We don't take the six months to get it all the way through. There's a lot of feedback that we walk through of, I don't want to do nothing. I don't want to show up to these meetings with nothing to go through. So that's what the goal. And today, I believe very strongly is where people, either people or the people happen, when people show up and get the public to come in, get outside members in to help to move us forward in the name of fulfilling the purpose, powers, and duties of the AAC, but also fundamentally the purpose and scope of ECAP, of which we're part of the purpose and scope of ECAP as amended by Measure D, which has its own purpose and scope, Measure D 2020. And then, you know, for purpose to act as a technical advisory panel of experts to the Board of Supervisors and other public agencies, including cities, districts, on matters involving economic enhancement of agriculture and environmental conservation on applicable agricultural lands. In Alameda County. Should maybe say East Alameda County or East area, but yeah, it is what it is. So we've gone through this one. We've laid out the purpose, powers, I mean, the purpose of what we're looking to get done, and then the administrator or the membership. Membership shall be the technical representatives of the professional field and advocates for economically and ecologically viable agriculture and open space in Alameda County. Purpose, powers, and duties A through J. Do I need to read them out loud and probably say no? How do we grade ourselves in terms of how we're doing across those and setting up the right structures and systems to enable that? Trying to move it forward. Sometimes I'm not sure all the time, but fundamentally, that's what structure to support strategy means to me is we're setting ourselves up because this committee shall. And there are quite a few things on that that we're not doing on the purpose, powers, and duties. Provide leadership and direction, make recommendations to enhance, provide active participation in leadership, undertake and direct special studies, participate, report to, and work with, advise and work with, advise, and then determine our own schedule. Yes, sir.
On the subcommittee meetings.
Yes.
I mean, that can be online meetings, so convened and members can be present at direct interaction, or they must be in person.
Awesome, let's get there. Not there yet to answer the question in terms of the flow. So now may I share this?
Yeah. Jasmine, can you
ECAP purpose and scope, verbatim, cut and paste. Measure D 2020 purposes, preserve and enhance, protect the natural quality, wildlife, habitat, watershed, and beautiful open spaces. Our purpose, been read before, and our membership. So demonstrates expertise by going to work in fields and, you know, want to continue to get a panel of experts in here. So how do you measure success? Fundamentally, the economically and then the environmental side, the preserve and protect. And so I just want to continue to have these discussions of what does good look like? What does winning look like? It's not about winning or losing, but I don't want to sit in this chair that I wasn't like, hey, I want this job, but I don't want to sit in the chair and not try and do the best job possible. So there's economic data. It's in mostly in grapes, cattle, rangelands, and then other crops coming in. Not a great diversity of crops, as we know. But how do we measure the success of the protection of conservation? And I don't know the answer to that, nor are we intending to right now, but I welcome the feedback from any and all about this. I think that helps drive toward where true north is, so to speak, where we put our energy, where we put our time, what we focus on. And how we get things done off the plate and move forward, because stagnation stinks again. Like, we have a purpose. All we can do is advise, not just about power. At the end of the day, all we can do is make recommendation, but we're codified in there as a body that needs. We have great staff and great staff support. And so I just want us to, I welcome the feedback, because this is an evolution as we go forward. And here we are. Does anybody have any other on terms of how you measure success on the protection and conservation? Like, the economics of agriculture is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, right.
And then the other side.
It's an interesting question. And I do like the open space acres, and I like the conservation acres, because I think space can be measured. And if it's open space and preserved, then it gives, there's access possibilities. And this gets to the Trails Committee, right? So I think that could be a very valid tool. I'm interested in pursuing a little bit. You know, I want to percolate on that a little bit more, but that's a very good question.
There's been some, I can't tell you, give you the reference off the top of my head. There has been some work in conservation biology where you look at number of protected acres, the size of protected acreage, you know, units, and the degree of connectivity between, you know, to the measure of sort of habitat conservation and protection. So there's an indices when those sorts of things can be rolled together. Or give you one measure.
Can you, do you have access to, or a link, or some kind of resources that you could share with us?
Yeah, not right now.
No, sure, but in the future.
Stuff, yeah.
I would love that.
Okay.
Thanks.
I mean, I think we need to be sure we all have the same understanding of what conservation acres and open space acres are. Habitat is different. It's not either. Really. We need to be sure we understand what we mean there.
Yeah, there is a definition for open space that was part of Measure D, and it's related to the findings that Carl did find when he looked at it. And so the findings have a definition for open space. And then in prior work done by the Ag Advisory Committee, we did come up with a definition for enhancement of agriculture and agricultural land, or at least in that one. That was related to the two-column definition that included sustainability and social benefits, as well as financial benefits. So there were definite specific parameters that could be met.
So the term that's not there is working landscape, which includes conservation acres, open space acres, habitat, and water benefits. The working landscape is particularly what we were working with is the Business Council Blue Ribbon study, because working landscapes is all of it, even the protected acres, which I'm presuming is what we mean by conservation, meaning there's easement on it or public ownership. That's still a working landscape. And so I think all of those acres are sort of defined by the by general plan. I mean, we've got urban growth boundaries defining the acreage on which urban will not creep onto. So all that extra land is, we don't have anything to do with unless LASCO does something with it. So the acreage, I don't think acreage is something we have a lot to deal with in terms of just counting acreage.
Yeah, and there's a perception that among some people, and I've actually heard from the planning department, that agriculture and open space or conservation or in front of them at some point. And, yeah.
I thought we're past that.
No, it's still.
I will say, you know, Barry and I looked into the figure, 135,000 acres of rangeland. That's only about half the rangeland now in the county. We don't know where the 135 came from. It's closer to 300,000.
Yeah, so she found some different numbers, and some of that might be parkland and stuff that isn't included in this 135. Right. So
and there's still agricultural operations on it.
Right.
Or much of it.
But it was considered parkland, not necessarily, I don't know, private owned or what, rangeland. So Don's going to look at the figures that Sheila came up with and kind of talk about how do we better define that to talk about all the East Bay Regional Park land or hard land or that's being grazed on that's considered ag land. Yeah, watershed land, right.
So, and Darrell, you know, I've heard Catalina times moan about the relationship with East Bay Regional Park. That could just be Catalina enforcement group that could be big problems. Do you have any sense as to how the relationship is between the cattle industry and publicly owned lands? Is it pretty good with a lot of communication or can be up there?
I'm gonna stay on track, okay. If I may, and just talk about what land looks like. So
controlled by the different waters,
right?
It might have different rules and maybe grazing is allowed, maybe not, but they may or may not count in that 135.
Right.
So the point is that 135 is probably underrepresented in terms of total acres, thus making range land just that much more grand in terms of the total number of acres of what we're doing. And I don't know if the dollars are off as well. I would assume the dollars per cattle that are grazed on East Bay Regional or other water district land is showing up in that dollar number, or else we have bigger problems in trusting the data.
Yeah, no, I think all the cattle, and that's subject to information we get from the cattlemen. They're reporting all their cattle, those who report. So.
Those are really hard. Sometimes I don't think they get all people that live in other counties that run cattle here. I'm not sure those numbers get picked up. And so there is no central agency that keeps track of cattle. It's whatever county can do, like say it.
So we send out mailings to, you know, those.
But the numbers are all over the place. It has to do with who they get in touch with and whether those numbers are relative or
when they sell.
So, in drought years, you know, if they're selling off their cattle because, you know, they don't have any feed for them. Or...
So the economics are a trend line. There's something to look at, and it's the best guess. Remember, the great report, crush report is never going to be perfect, nor the row crop report, nor is it ever going to be perfect. But it has a trend in a reasonable direction where you know if you're growing the economy, you know if you're shrinking it. So we have that and still want to stay on the right-hand side of there. How do we measure success?
What is not particularly in this graph is the crop report is tracking urban ag and school farms and so on. And so with more dollars coming from USDA and local efforts and nonprofits and so on into the urban area, that will be some dimension that will grow and we'll see that change too, Kathy.
And that's
that kind of comes and goes too for, 10 years ago, the school gardens and community gardens were going real strong, and then they took this nosedive, and they're coming back a little bit. You know, there's been more efforts in recognizing with an egg, but that's also been kind of an up and down, depending upon the winds of who's in charge. You know, we still get overwatched, so they don't.
So, can I ask what's the measurement tool to say that it's gone up and down?
Kind of just counting the number of school gardens, working with the county school district, board of education, and the school district, and crunching numbers as best we can.
Okay, Mr. Fredericks, anything on what winning looks like on the right side?
I'm fine.
So I'm going to invite Mr. Schneider because I can't as a chair. Do you have anything else to add in terms of metric success?
No, but maybe anything. Is that slide going to be available?
Yes, I will get it to Liz to be a part of coming in later. So I visit also to the committee chairs and the committee members. It's a challenge to what does good look like. That's what the charters are trying to help force us to do. What do we want to get done, and how do we know if we're moving it in the direction we want to? So yes, we'll be made available, and yes, we'll take answers offline because I'm open and curious. This one, I probably should have it up and I was talking through, but I go through this every meeting. Yes, sir.
I just thought of something. Did anybody check with the ACRCB or NRCB about the way to keep any statistics like this?
The chairman requested that a representative from the ACRCB would ask for and ask the staff at RCB.
I think your answer is no. I mean, we're working on the same lands that were just counted. But in terms of dollars that go into conservation programs, we can count that.
Yeah. Just land or acre to the I mean, if they had numbers that go, wow, you know, our numbers are just completely different.
That would be something that they could do.
It was going to be similar, but not exactly. I just looked at the map, the RCD map, and it's not, you know, exactly the same congruent with unincorporated areas.
Well, that's our.
I mean, the border of the.
The RCD.
And then they did the whole time. The chair would bless that. Thank you. Okay, so then these are the notes from the one-on-ones, and again, it's what's meant to be in order. But the cattle, getting the cattle range land, that 135, I'm going on 300,000 acres to have the appropriate representation. Thank you to the Swedes who show up at battle. Climate action planning. I got some feedback also that like we need to be talking about agriculture and farming, not about saving the world. They go hand in hand, they're not mutually exclusive. But fundamentally, water, maybe should have been a little bit more high up there. I think that's a gap in terms of what our structure looks like. LP, I believe, is listening in right now. And Zone 7, very important player there. But there's other stuff and food growth and water flows. You know, north intensive agricultural area, like without the water getting there, it's not. It's rangeland. It's small ranches. And so I want to just challenge ourselves to think about that. I challenge myself as the chair to think about that. How does water, we have Mr. Quigley coming on as the water resources. And then who's our other water person?
Elka.
Yeah, before Elka at the exhibition, we have another one in our shed. Watershed. Yeah, it's like somewhere close there. Right. And so I encourage those, but to be coming forward with what that looks like as well, because food grows where water flows. Intensive agriculture happens where water is. I'm going to move on from this, and if anybody has any others, and get to. So then the subcommittee charter. This was getting the reason for existence, right? Oh, sorry, there's more in there. Yeah, this is a big. But the subcommittees that we currently have: executive, membership, land use and ag enhancement. That's a big one. Solar, equine, trails. Advocacy and outreach, urban ag, and environmental justice. I'm not sure right now that structure support strategy is done, and what does that look like, and how do we measure success, but trying to drive it in that direction. Planning department, this is from previous, where the planning department staff to support it. One open position has been filled. I'm within the agenda item, and it's on paper, so I'd like to say congratulations to Mr. Benetton. It was no longer part of the AAC, but has been hired by the planning department as a planner. A senior planner.
We need to all make it to the planning department.
He said ag and open space.
Ag and open space, right?
Where he's focusing.
Where Rosa comes in, where Alex got reported and happened to school here. So that's awesome. I have heard if Carl, you can push these subcommittees, the administrative help and support across the documentation, because tree falls and forest doesn't make a sound. We're going to get into discussion of if we have meetings. I want the subcommittees to have meetings, not prohibiting the email discourse. Even the motives that come through, the chairs are responsible for, but there has to be a there, right? There has to be like what we're talking about. It's put pen and paper. And there has been an effort for help to go on the discussion that I'll have with Liz about what good looks like and how we maintain the best structure of these subcommittees in the name of moving it forward. We don't need subcommittees for the sake of subcommittees. We don't. I don't really believe, right? And that ecosystem services, I still want to have a conversation about what the intention was there. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole right now, but the purpose of these, so we can make sure that we're setting up well. And then track success, right? Or if we're not doing anything, then let's dissolve it and not waste people's time, because we all theoretically plan to do. And then so ongoing calls with administration. Again, D1 supervisor, it's only one of five, is very adamant about will back you up, live, will support in terms of what that looks like. So that's that. Subcommittee guidelines, those are from the original offsite. Each committee chair may know how these are guidelines. Not hard and fast rules. Each committee chair may have no more than one
each committee member may chair no more than one. I'm breaking my own rule, and I'm allowing Dr. Gosselin to break the own rule, and I don't like it. The executive and Mike, you know, so there's some dance there, but do want to transition away from that duality of rules, and I trust Dr. Gosselin will talk about that with his trail. Each committee will have a chair, a charter, for which the chair is ultimately responsible. Now we get into the charter, and that causes, by putting pen to paper, you start to have what I call the right discussion, forcing those right discussions about what it looks like, how we envision the future. And if not, there's no point having a subcommittee just out of internal fights if it's not going to get anywhere, right? Let's try and find about what we can align on and move things forward. Each committee member shall serve on a subcommittee, and no more than two or three of the same people in on everything. The chair and the vice chair should be aware and invited to all subcommittee meetings, and we should work very hard to not be the loudest voice in the room, but have the biggest ears in the room as that goes forward. Subcommittees shall have agendas and report out. Like if no, then there's a there. Here's what we're talking about. Here's what we're getting to. I think charter is going to help us develop what those subcommittee meetings look like. We got to meet at some level in person or on a Zoom call where people are there. That said, the email discussions, the ongoing, that can continue to go on, but there has to be a there as we're moving forward. Chair Wendy will continue to work with Liz on, again, saying it twice on that support. Okay, then the charter, and then, so here's some additional stuff that's come up. Like there are multiple different types of memberships on the subcommittees. So the AAC committee membership, that's very clear. And only an AAC member may chair a committee. An AAC ex officio members, all the LP who's here, we're setting it up and having a vote. I would love for them to vote. Now, will they, can they, because of the ex officio nature of it, even on subject? And Liz or LP or anybody else with knowledge on the subject would like to have a little discussion here so we can say, yes, you're allowed to do it, and yes, you think you should. Or if you all disagree with me, then we'll cross it off and say they're non-voting members of the committee. Go ahead, Dr.
I know that the policy of some organizations is to not politicize the committee. So voting in those cases may be a little more difficult, or ex officio members may be cautious because of that.
Understood. Thank you. Anything? Liz, do you have any insight on this, even if people would?
I think I would tend to agree with Larry that since the ex officio members represent their employer in most cases, I think it might be hard for them to vote, at least in some cases, because they wouldn't want to represent their organizations having a certain opinion if they don't know, if their board hasn't taken a vote and taken a certain position. So I think it would be difficult. If the subcommittees could function, come to an agreement without voting,
yeah.
That I think that would be, it would be easier for ex officio members to participate.
In meetings, it's going to be easier to reach a consensus than it is to come around. I think it was like one of the other subcommittee did. Mostly, I don't even remember if we go. The discussion that occurs when everybody's in the same place at the same time, usually we can reach a consensus. I think in the extreme case, we might have to vote, in which case, the ex officio members could be disused unless they feel strong.
So then, thank you. Anybody else? Then we're going to say, in fact, ex officio members who are on a subcommittee can leave it to their own choice whether they want to vote if the vote is called. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So we want ambiguity in terms of they can turn on and turn off when they want to vote so they get there, or maybe we just say no so it's very clear.
I always go back to being on a committee and not having a vote is why I'm there. But your statement then is they may be uncomfortable with it, so they can just have to stay and vote.
Well, but then why are they here in the larger AAC?
Well, there's participating. Yeah, there's participating in the discussion, and you know, providing knowledge and background and all that. For example, in my case, there are at least certain topics where I would not want to vote on something unless I know that the Board of Supervisors has voted and taken a certain position.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't just be my personal opinion that I would be providing the committee.
And I think that like Zone 7 would be a good example. Is she voting for herself or is she taking a vote for Zone 7? Without knowing what Zone 7, maybe they don't have policy on that.
Yeah.
Maybe they do, but I could. But that really puts people on.
All right, so then let's just say
I think it'd be better off other things.
I think it as an ex officio, I kind of agree with Liz in that. Am I voting my personal preference?
Right.
Am I voting the ag department's preference? Am I voting the Board of Supervisors' preference? You know, I'm here as a representative for the county as a whole, not necessarily to give my own personal opinion, where you guys are here representing yourself. So it really is your body. I'm here to lend any thoughts, insights, carry action items that are, you know, kind of forward as needed and help facilitate, but I'm not necessarily here to make the decision for you guys.
Not voting eliminates potential for jurisdictional bias. It also lends an olive branch for the AACN and subcommittees to grow.
Yes. So no vote, ex officio members will be treated like advisory members and we want to bring on. Okay, head on around. Non-AAC members. So first, it must be like, we must be aware of people, again, try it out, who's coming on the committees. So made public and said at a meeting here with a public forum, like, okay, they're part of the subcommittee. Leave it to, this is a tough one, but leave it to, like, the chair is choose your committee. But the power of the chairman here, of power of convening, I can ratify. It's got across my desk where I can't manage the world. I will support the committee chairs. This was decided upon at the executive committee, so it's not me. I want less power, but I also want process and control so we know who's there. Okay, and then it's going to take us some time to get there, right? We're not going to show up overnight and have high-functioning committees with agenda report outs as we go. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're all here because we care and we want to continue to get better. So with that, and the charters, again, the who, what, where, when, and why of the charters, it's the who. We have it, write it down, okay? So charters also are live documents, right? There's a lot of rush to get it here, get it done, and it was to drive the process forward. Right, it's spring, and so we're almost a quarter done with the year, and then we're going to look back, and we want to make sure that the use of time that people show up is worthy. So thank you all for putting that time and effort to putting the pen to paper, but I think it is making us better. So with this slide, is there clarity on how we're establishing the subcommittee is going to look like? Liz.
I know I keep saying this, but I just want to reiterate that we do need to be careful with subcommittees and the Brown Act. We cannot have more than, currently there are 15 members appointed to the committee. So a quorum of the committee is 8. That changes obviously as we get more people appointed. So right now you cannot have a subcommittee meeting with more than 7 appointed members of the committee present. And another thing that I wanted to warn against is, since several of you are on multiple committees, please don't talk about the same thing in 2 different committees. Because if you talk in, you know, committee X about a certain subject, and then you go to committee Y and talk about the same thing, you're essentially holding a serial meeting with the 2 different subcommittees.
Exceeding
the quorum. Adding the 2 subcommittees together, you're exceeding the quorum. So just keep that in mind.
Very clear on that one as well. Does anybody need, we've been through it a lot. There's, the Brown Act training. We need any more Brown Act training and we're good. In terms of how to manage this,
I do think it's reasonable in one subcommittee, if there's a member of a different subcommittee, to be aware of what that other subcommittee, if they're thinking of the same issue. not discussing in detail or asking them what the other subcommittee was thinking, but just to know if there's some overlap of things that were being discussed.
Yeah, they can know the topics discussed, but just not get into the issue.
Okay, so then subcommittee, the rest of it, that's it. Stamina on chair and back on the subcommittees went through that no more than seven. Okay, the chair update. So the advise the board of suits, TNP and other Liz and this is part of the offside that were head nods. And I'm asking you, Liz, what does that process look like? Should I go right to supervisors or go through you and say, I would like the opportunity on behalf of this body to address those boards at some point?
I think the best way to do that would be to go to the supervisor and they could put you on the agenda.
Understood. Is that, I guess, why would it not go through? So I'm not saying I'm not fine with it, but I wouldn't do that without asking you, and why wouldn't it go through you as a staff member?
It could. It's just a more official route since Supervisor Hobart sits on the committee and the supervisors approve the agenda items. I'm, as staff, I'm sort of sort of in a side position. I don't have, you know, if I have a project to present to the Transportation and Planning Committee, I request to have an item put on the agenda. So it would be kind of the same process. I don't have the authority to put something on the agenda. I could ask, but.
Thank you. Should we start with the Transportation Planning Committee or?
Yeah, I would suggest, generally speaking, Transportation and Planning Committee is sort of the entree to the full board. So I think it'd be appropriate to start with them and then have them say, yes, this should be a presentation to the full board and, you know, kind of move on.
Thank you. The 5B, I jumped down a little bit. And again, congratulations, Mr. Bennett, and welcome to the role.
Thank you so much.
Item C, and this one is on there, and I trust Liz can and will be brief, but fundamentally, the general plan is on a constitutional document, and for the state constitution has to be updated on a cadence, and we're in it. Many municipalities are in it, and it's a long, slow process, but this is how the sausage is made. So, Liz.
And I just wanted to very briefly update you. I've mentioned several of the general plan projects that we're working on currently, and there is overlap with this committee. There's the environmental justice element, and we are expecting a draft out hopefully sometime in May. So we can, if you wish, bring that draft to you to talk about that. There is some overlap, especially in the area of one of the main topics is food access. Mm-hmm. So there will be policies and programs about urban ag and urban greening and things like that. So we if you want to be involved in that, we can bring that to you. We also have the climate action plan and the safety element, which are being done together because there's overlap in the area of climate adaptation. Our current climate action plan and safety element do not address adaptation, and elements of adaptation will be put into both documents. Also, the first go round with the climate action plan, we did not include agriculture just because there wasn't that much going on in terms of greenhouse gas reduction, you know, involving agriculture when we did it the first time. So we do want to include agriculture this time. So we want your input on that. Our consultants suggested that we come to you in the May to June timeframe, that would be an appropriate place in the our process to get your input. So we will do that. We'll kind of play that by ear, depending on how far along we are and where the committee is.
Can I ask, when was the last time it was updated?
2014, I think. Wow. So we worked on it like 2012, 2014 okay. time frame, kind of. And then the safety element, you know, it traditionally has talked about floods and earthquakes and things like that. But we are required by state law to also look at adaptation for safety element. And there are, so we will want to hear from you with regard to things like drought and flood and extreme heat and other relevant issues that are impacting the ag communities.
Wildfires.
Oh yes, wildfires, definitely. Yeah. And there are also some new state laws with requirements having to do with wildfires. So we'll be addressing those also.
Yeah.
So those are, considering those, are those topics, instead of, you normally would bring it to all of us before we had this committee subcommittee structure, are those topics that you see fitting in with our subcommittee structure first?
Potentially.
I mean, as a way to kind of start a two-way working relationship with committee?
Yeah, I guess there are a couple of ways we could do it. We could come and talk to the whole group, and then you could decide if there is a subcommittee that might be appropriate, or we could, if there's a subcommittee that you think would be appropriate to talk to, we could do that and then come to a big group, either way.
I can see the climate action adaptation, for example, and needing a lot more depth than we normally would have in this setting.
Yeah. So
I intention would be to do so, right? Mm-hmm. To just facilitate it. Well, mm-hmm. there's a lot on the brew, and we got to like what this board don't want to withhold information from this whole board, but also there's something to get. I don't need to dive too far into the weeds of time, but want to be supportive too.
Right.
Where the common brew.
Well, and I'll remind everybody that we have an urban ag and environmental justice committee. So that would be kind of handy.
Food access topic.
Exactly.
I was trying to catch the climate action planning as it's coming through and then sort of setting mm-hmm. stage for that as it flows through. That was with intention, and then is going to be caught where with our committee structure, don't know.
Yeah, it that's so large that it'll probably affect everybody. So I'll you know, go with your direction in terms of starting with subcommittees and moving to a big group, or either other way around. The housing element, we're working very hard to try to finish the draft of that, and the overlap there would be ag worker housing and the need for it in the county, what kinds of policies and programs we might include to address the need. And I asked Rob to look into that. So if you have any thoughts on that, you could communicate with Rob. And then of course there's Rosa, which I'm sorry to say is still kind of on the back burner with all these other projects going on, but it's still very much on the list, and we hope to get to it as soon as possible. And for those of you, I keep forgetting, Rosa is the resource conservation. If it's three parts, there's resource conservation, open space, and agriculture elements. There's a lot, it encompasses a lot of material and issues there. Draft was started long ago and never completed, so we have a starting point, but we have not been able to get it finished. So that's what we're working on then.
Thank you for that update. Questions? Appreciation. I missed an item. That was 5A5, Google Drive. And we're allowed to use Google Drive as a sharing of information. I think it would be good to get all of the man to talk about the working landscape document by the whatever the business, talk about business calendar. We were talking about the water recycling settings there. We're talking about these of getting those all into one spot, the point where we can drop all of those in. Also, want to like the plan to set it up where you put the chargers in there. The one key, it is a share, you know, the shareable nature of Google Drive. We have to be very aware of this ground as well, that we are not using them as collaborative documents. Okay, so the subcommittee chairs, or no, we'll take it upon ourselves, post them as a PDF, probably do it myself just to avoid any of those unforeseen consequences. So just want to make that one very clear. We are not using Google Drive as a collaborative. If it's collaborative nature on single documents, we're using it to share information. Okay. Is anybody clear on that differentiator? Is anybody uncomfortable with accessing the Google Drive and a document off of which? Hearing none, I'd like to guess so.
Question. If they're on the Google Drive, are they, can they be edited on the drive? That's my question too.
So that's the,
do you want them to be edited?
No, don't go to PDF, go to PDF as opposed to the doc across it, so they're just shared up there.
But people go back, folders are back, go back and edit the PDF document. I'm just saying, because we're just making it clear that they're not to be edited. Posted, yes, but not edited on the drive.
Well said. Posted, not edited, and the PDF, but yes, which is not foolproof on, absolutely. So.
And is there one responsible person who's kind of watching and setting it up and getting the link out to us all?
If I'm allowed to, as chair, I'll take that one. I just didn't want to step on either administrative of the laws and Brown Act of Life, so I'll take that one and get it sent out to us so we have a clearinghouse for the health doctors. Okay, closing item number five, opening item number six. We took no action. We should open it up to the public. Hearing none, we'll close the public comment on the item six.
I just wanted to make the committee aware of something that the Agriculture Department has been working on. There was a bill passed, and I can't remember the bill number, but there was a bill passed specifically for the livestock pass. And so we have been working with our cattlemen and others in and the sheriff department. We've been working with neighboring counties to develop a livestock pass, so in case of fire emergencies or whatever, that we need people to be able to get in and either get water to their livestock or get their livestock out, that they have a pass so that the sheriff and OES folks can recognize that these are Daryl's cattle and he has a right to get into this property to get his cattle out or to get water or feed to his cattle in times of emergency. So that's something we've been working on with. We're working closely, especially with Santa Clara County. Theirs is up and running already. And we have people who have cattle on both lands. It's not just for cattle, but livestock in general, which includes beehives. So we have beekeepers who need to get their hives out. It's for commercial purposes, and there's a minimum number of head of livestock that we're concerned. It's not for pets. So if you have your pet cow or your pet sheep or your pet horse, this isn't designed for that. And in time of emergency, you know, we need to be very cautious of who's going in on these areas that are deemed hazardous by OES. It's not to get you in beyond what OES is going to allow you to get in. It's just verifying that you have cattle. This is an area you're accessible to, so they don't go in and somebody says, well, I got to get my cattle, but actually I'm going to go in and steal all of Larry's furniture out of his house. Or, you know, it's kind of to prevent that. So we've had some. Our county council who is working on it has left the county. And so we have a new county council reviewing it, but it is that county council. We've been meeting with the sheriff and the OES people. So hopefully that's something that we will have before our next disaster. I'm hoping by summer. That's probably something we'll have to take to TMP and get the blessing of the board on top of it. There's training requirements for people who get the pass on what to do at times of an emergency and stuff. But I thought it'd be good for the committee to know that that's something we're working on and hopefully to get past. There was also submitted, it hasn't been passed. It's currently going through as an agriculture pass. That kind of opens it up beyond the livestock. The bill that passed and is in law now is a livestock pass for critters. But there are people who might need to go in and take care of their grapes or their irrigation lines or another crop. So there is an ag pass that opens it up that is currently going through legislation. So this livestock pass, I imagine, will be a living document that we'll tweak as we need see fit depending upon what other bills get passed. And like I said, we're trying to keep it so that it, when OES gets the pass, maybe Santa Clara needs to come into Alameda County, a rancher there, because that's where his access to get in because there's too much fire over here. Or Daryl has cattle in Alameda, but he's going to have to come in through Santa Clara County or Stanislaus County or San Joaquin County, you know. So we're trying to keep it something that we can shop around so all those involved in an emergency will see something similar and be able to verify it. So I just want to let the committee know that's something we're working on. Hopefully we're getting close.
Are there provisions for service providers like rescue units, livestock rescue units, or veterinarians?
Not necessarily in what we're doing, but I know OES has been working like with some other rescue units.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. B, Ag Day with Board of
Supervisors. So next, usually every year we have an Ag Day in front of the Board of Supervisors to celebrate Ag Week. And last couple of years we haven't had it because of COVID. Last year we did create a video, but it just, we weren't able to get it on the agenda because there was so much going on the agenda. So this year we're back in, we're going to do an Ag Day. It's going to be April 4th. We're keeping it very small. Usually we represent all of the supervisors and agriculture that's going on in all the different districts. So this year we're going to keep it very, very small. We are going to show the video that we created. A lot of things are very similar in there. So we'll show that next year. We'll do a full blown, we'll get 4-H kids and FFA kids, and you know, we'll make it a bigger presentation. But that's going to be happening on April 4th.
Thank you. Any questions there? Thank you. Open closing item number 6. Bypass item number 7 on to item number 8. And the notes as we go through this are fine. Liz, to help us with some informational update. This is being trying to wrap my head around it. It's March 9, 23. The Board of Supervisors adopted the amendment to decap the Castro Valley GP as stated in Measure D 2022, and the zoning ordinance amendments to incorporate the ag building definition. And then County Council suggested a modification of the sentence structure of the definition recommended by the AAC with no change to the meaning. And then Feb 21, Planning Commission voted to recommend County Council's version of the definition without the addition of the word bond for women. Feb 28, AAC, after I departed, recommended the addition of the word equipment and it failed. March 9, Board of Supervisors approved the zoning ordinance amendment to incorporate the proposed agriculture definition with the addition of the word barn before equipment.
And if you could stop sharing, I can show the actual language.
I'm not up there.
Oh, sorry.
That's here to be all set up.
It's been over.
What's the one in the back?
Yeah. So the and you've seen this all before, but as Carl said, February 21st went to the Planning Commission. They recommended approval of the ag of the general plan amendments and the addition of the ag building definition. Board of Supervisors on March 9th. So the general plan amendments are done now. The board voted on those. There's no more action. All we need to do now is take that text and actually physically put it in the document, put the revised document up on the website and distribute it, and that's done. Ordinances need a first reading and a second reading, and then they go into effect 30 days later. So the second reading is scheduled for April 13th, and if the board approves it, it'll go into effect on May 13th. So you saw this at your last meeting, but just to go over it again, there will be a few sentences added to East County Area Plan. The preface talking about the Measure D 2022 was approved and it's been incorporated. Large parcel agriculture designation description is being modified or has been modified to add the 0.025 for ag buildings and another 0.025 for equestrian arenas. Resource management has been modified just to add the 0.025 just for the riding arenas. Castro Valley Canyon Lands, again, same change to resource management to add the additional square footage for riding arenas. And there are some tables in ECAP that needed to be revised just to make them consistent with the changes. So this is the definition that your committee first recommended back in February of 2021. It's a modification of the building code definition, but it adds some additional uses and also processing, treatment, packaging. And it also adds the at the very end that the buildings are not for social events.
And I think, if I may, that in my ignorance at the time, that was the motion was for the South Valley Area Plan only, and that's what we were discussing as it went forward. And then it's like, okay, well, where does this go? So it doesn't matter much about what you're talking.
Yeah. A few months ago, I let you know that in the process of preparing the ag building definition, putting it in the ordinance form for adoption, County Council suggested a few changes. So the underlying language would be added. So it would add or used for the types of structures that this would apply to. To house farm implements or equipment. It moves poultry and livestock up from the third line to the second line. So it's poultry, livestock, or similar farm or ranch animals, or hay, grain, olives, nuts, hops, wine, etc. And then it down toward the bottom where it says the previous version said agriculture / horticultural products. And we just added and or just to make clear that it could be either one of those, both of them or either one of those. So this is what we took to the Planning Commission. Well, we took both definitions, the one that your committee recommended and this one, to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission recommended this one, the County Council's recommendation. And as Carl said, at the Planning Commission meeting, Dick suggested adding the word farm before equipment in the second line. The Planning Commission did not vote to support that change. Your committee did not vote to support that change. When it went to the board, the board did vote to support that change. So this is the definition that was approved by the Board of Supervisors at the first reading. So it's the same as the previous one. It just has the word farm added in the second
line. But there was a real drama.
Right. And then at that meeting, there was also some additional discussion. Supervisor Hobart questioned the inclusion of the very last phrase here, nor shall it be a place used by the public or for social events. That was in the original version that your committee recommended. So there was discussion back and forth, and ultimately Supervisor Hobart voted with the other supervisors present and did approve this version. Whether there might be some additional discussion for the second reading on April 13th, I'm not sure. But this is where we are right now, is this is the definition that has thus far been approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Liz, does that mean they can park construction equipment down there? Because we got several places around where there's like 50 separate gravel trucks parked. So if we build a barn, we can park that in there.
Is it
well, that was actually the reason Dick mentioned to include the word farm. So it's farm implements and farm equipment. To make it clear that it's supposed to be equipment that you use in the agricultural operation on the agricultural property. So if it's gravel trucks for a dirt hauling business, then no, they should not be.
That would have been a really good definition to put just that.
No, yeah, right.
That's pretty ambiguous.
Okay, so
Do
you have if I may, what then happened what did Halpert bring forward, or what was that discussion? That was just, you said it, it's just he wanted to take away social events. What was his logic?
His concern was that there's battle cases that go on, wineries, and people could have private social events, weddings, whatever, family events.
Yeah.
And there were two reasons that I brought up that were problematic with removing that language, aside from the fact that it had been agreed upon. The first was the first was that all agricultural properties already get a 1% FAR for visitor survey commercial use. That doesn't go away. So they can hold those kinds of events in a portion of their property, which is the additional 2.5% that's strictly for agricultural use, where they wouldn't be able to have these social events. That was the first. The second reason is the CEQA analysis that was done summer of last year, 2022,
July,
still by, used the Ag Advisory Committee's definition of an agricultural building. And if it's going to be changed to allow social events and uses of the public, that CEQA analysis would have to be revisited. And that would have to go through a whole other process, and it would delay the adoption of this change into the building.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Goslin, do you have a question?
Yeah. So I see both poultry and livestock added and then removed from this definition. So it was added up. And then in the handout we received today that's dated March 8, 2022, it shows livestock not being in the definition at all. So this is the first reading.
Well, it's what? There.
What did you receive today?
There's a handout that I have that's blue title. And on page 3, table 1, definitions, maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see livestock in that proposed new definition.
Which page are you on?
Page 3, the agenda item 8. And,
Are you looking at the
A or B
board?
It's
A or 8B.
Pardon me?
There's two A's. There's 8A and 8B.
I am looking at a handout.
I have one sticker on it.
It says A.
Page 3 is the very top.
Did you pick it up here?
Yeah. Livestock. I don't see livestock in there either.
Oh, that. So this is. This is the document that I received from TDC. So this is not a county document.
Oh, very good.
So this is just their proposal for specifically for South Livermore.
This has been long superseded, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is from March of 2022. So.
And this is why Liz talking to me about keeping the paperwork flowing, but I want to keep information in front of us and let we forget how we got here. But this is where it is. Are you okay?
Yep. As long as that's the definition. First reading definition.
Yeah. So in this version, poultry and livestock was just moved. It wasn't removed.
I think the phrase similar farm or ranch animals is an interesting phrase. Does that mean?
Llamas and alpaca.
Of course. It
means one day a city person will be interpreting that.
You're funny now.
Yeah, or guard dog.
Yeah, I mean, dog, you know? What research? Yeah, exactly right. What recircles? It is the case that what recircles in certain planning departments is whether or not horses are livestock. So it's a common misconstrued. And you know, the technical advisory committee for the equine permit streamlining project has just been set up, and that's something we can handle on that.
So this would cover them as well as guard dogs.
Well, it covered stock dogs for you and I, and,
yeah.
You know, but maybe not other people.
Well, no, but I think guard dogs.
Right.
It would probably eliminate the kennel. Right.
Yeah. Oh, no, right. No.
Well, it depends on the nature of the.
I saw one that was doing good vegetation management on open space up here on the river.
Yeah, if you're raising a turkey, those are like the dogs themselves. And,
even if you're breeding dogs, show dogs per se, that's still considered animal husbandry, but having daycare for urban cats.
Yeah,
it's not considered.
I'm sorry, the virus. I didn't mean to do that.
Okay, so we're not going to change anyway. I mean,
no, it's just the nuances of understanding.
Any further questions on this one?
I do, and I want to get a sense of what happened in the process of what was recommended by this committee. Why it went this? It went. It said no, and then it went yes. And now it's about to, it may change, but let's just say this passes the second reading as this. Is there any kind of, what does that say about the relationship of our authority in relationship to the Board of Supervisors, if anything?
Good question.
We're a panel of experts, but we're not policy experts.
Right.
And we're not putting language into what that looks like.
Right.
So the first is, I made a motion for the South Valley Plan wanting to get wineries filled, right? I came in with that bias, completely ignored livestock. We were just talking about South Valley Plan, how we need small wineries because we're failing. And then Larry lights me up. He's like, now if this goes, we can't get livestock. And I was like, oh, that's a glaring miss. That should be there. That wasn't the intention. So then we modified it there. And then it goes to council, and council's going to do some ands and buzz and put those one there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a fair then change structure of it. Planning Commission is going to supersede us in the organizational recommendation to the Board of Supes.
Okay.
Planning Commission makes a recommendation.
Right.
We did. They make it. The Board of Supes makes their final.
So we're okay with it.
Liz, do you have a total?
I know it is what it is, but it's not egregious. Yeah.
It's not egregious.
Okay, got it. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. And it's keeping an eye on it, but I want to keep an eye on it because.
But it does raise a question of, you know, you raise a question on page one about a relationship with the Board of Supervisors, but maybe our relationship with the Planning Commission is also something we should pay attention
to. I think it's a very good point and should indeed.
I don't know who the current chair is or anything, but. And Liz is
a good relationship with those in power.
I go to the Planning Commission when I have a project for them. I think Goth is the chair.
I mean, do we have any ag people familiar with ag on the commission at this point?
Jim, I'm going to get you on track with respect.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going to close 8A unless there are further questions. Okay, next we're going to move to South Valley, South Livermore specific amendments proposed by TDC. And that process is going through Liz.
Right. So that is the document that Larry was talking about before is the one that we received from TDC last year, almost exactly a year ago. And we are moving forward now with these proposals. And actually, if you read through this, the Measure D 2022 actually took care of a couple of these proposals. One was the ag definition and the other was the 0.025 for ag buildings. So that's basically taken care of at this point. So we are looking at the remaining recommended changes and getting those ready to take through the process. Besides this committee, I think we just need to go to the Planning Commission and Board Transportation and Planning and then the full board. But it'll take a little bit of time to work with County Council to get the documents in shape to take to those bodies and have to do public noticing and such. So Rob will be helping with that. He's already been reviewing the documents and getting set with that. So I'm hoping if all goes well that we can have these adopted by the end of the year.
That's awesome. So, for example, the specific thing you talked about before, the definition of making cultural buildings are not the same. These two documents, which will we have one definition in the Livermore plan and different definition versus the county, or the differences in these documents being reconciled?
The differences are being reconciled. Basically, we started with what's in the TDC document, but what we're ending up with is the definition that I showed just a bit ago. So the definition for ag building will be the same throughout in the South Livermore area and everywhere else in the East County in the agricultural area.
Any further questions on that commentary?
The clustering proposal is a pretty nice start. They're not being proposed at all for the remainder of the county chase itself in the plan area.
Actually, the policy, I believe, and I'm sure Dick can correct me if I'm wrong, the clustering policy, it used to be policy 36 before Measure D, as I wrote it. If it's 37 or 38 now. I believe that applies to the whole agricultural area, the large parcel agriculture area.
Right. Yeah. Not just some.
That's correct. And it's the South Livermore plan has its own extensivity, and then the clustering associated with that give the more person still have only going down to 100 acres and that's a heat out area and we can't go 100 acres here, 100 acres here and get that. As I understand, please correct me because I want to work when you get there, but they have to be adjacent. So now you can have a 0.02 on this one, but this one will have no, will have nothing forever. And then South Valley Plan going down in the 20s, it provides different opportunities for the sort of cultural, agricultural core, if you will, and the land trust is set.
Pretty good. I mean, a little more detail. So throughout PCAP, you get the cluster. You get a bonus unit. You can, you have a 500 acre parcel. You can cluster. You can normally get five units on that 100 acres. You subdivide the 100 acres. If you cluster them in one location, you get a bonus parcel. The idea is to have much contiguous open land
as possible. You get six.
And that's true. In the South Livermore County, you can't get the expert in the cluster, but you can cluster the 2-acre development envelopes. Those 2-acre development envelopes get 20,000 square feet of commercial space. And so you can aggregate those. You cluster them, you can combine those commercial 20,000 to have a large visitor serving, in this case, a mid-sized resort hotel. That was the impetus for recognizing that the clustering applied to the South Livermore plan area in a somewhat different way than it. The clustering for the large parcel was mainly for residents. You cluster the residents. But in the South Livermore plan, where you have commercial 20,000 acres non-residential, you can cluster that as well. There happened to have been a typo in the ECAP when Measure D was put into it that said single family clustering. Measure D struck out the word single family, but that strikeout had never eliminated the word single family in the printed version of ECAP. I don't know how I recognized that when I was talking with David Kent and Maureen Souza, but I was reviewing the whole document and said, no, that's not what Measure D said. When you let non-residential clustering happen, you can combine those 20,000 square feet of non-residential space on the corner of a puzzle and create enough building area for resort, mid-sized resort hotel. Not giant, but
I think it's clear that in the ECAP area, the clustering is for single family units. You have a 100 acre parcel, you get 5 units, you put them off in a corner by themselves, it lets you do 6. In the South Livermore plan area, that's really not that much of an issue because the desire there is for larger commercial parcels. So if you have 100 acres there, you're entitled to 10 acres of building worth of building envelope. You can cluster all that together in one corner where you can build your resort. Right? So, so the focus in the South Livermore plan is enough land for mid-scale commercial development. In the ECAP area, the rest of the county, is to cluster single family residences.
You can still cluster the non-residential in the ECAP area when you start out the non-residential clustering, but there's no real benefit to it because you get so much square footage anyway. You don't need to aggregate it. You're on 500 acres parcel and you get 2.5% now, but 3.5% is what you need from what you do.
No need.
What's the difference between a resort hotel and a lodge? So the essence of the question is that lodges are necessary infrastructure. There is an employer area ratio restriction on a lodge, but I hear there's restriction on a resort. So I don't understand the differentiation between the two and why one would be unrestricted yet the other one would. Now, I do understand the piece of the connection to, in the 20,000 square foot commercial, but again, there's an exclusion from that restriction for lodges. So I don't understand the difference between a resort hotel and a lodge. And, you know, I recognize
well, that may be advertised in a blind dispatch.
It may be what?
It may be advertised. Maybe you don't advertise lodges in a wine district, you advertise hotels.
I guess I don't understand.
Hunting lodges, other times it's lodges.
Why isn't a lodge not restricted?
Pardon me?
Why isn't a lodge not restricted? What?
Well, because there are terms of use in Measure D, necessary infrastructure. And that leads to an explanation in Measure D as to what that is. And then when you go to the zoning ordinance, you discover that the lodge is listed as one of those uses. So I can step you through that.
A lodge is probably not necessary infrastructure.
Well, but again, it's defined in the ordinance.
If you call it a residential use, then it's limited to 12,000 square feet. If it's a commercial use, then it's non-residential and it falls into the 0.01 FAR.
But again, there's an exclusion in Measure D. It's policy 13 and specifically to address.
Well, we have a fundamental difference there. The infrastructure in policy 13 is things like electrical wires and water conveyances and things like that. A lodge is not infrastructure as defined in policy 13.
Yeah,
I think we're getting kind of off track here.
Well, I understand, but again, it's there is a golf course is considered necessary infrastructure according to Measure D. So there is this tendency just to ignore it and blow it off.
Okay, so it's true. 13, the county shall not provide or authorize public facilities or other infrastructure in excess of that needed for permissible development consistent with the emission. This policy shall not bar new, expanded, or replacement infrastructure necessary to create adequate services for East County. Maintenance or repair improvements of public facilities which do not increase capacity and infrastructure such as pipeline canals, power transmission lines, which have no excessive growth inducing effect on East County area and have permit conditions to ensure that no services can be provided beyond that consistent with development allowed by this initiative. Infrastructure shall include public facilities, community facilities, and all structures and development necessary to the provisions of public service utilities.
Right.
Okay, so what am I missing? Where am I seeing the lodge?
Community facilities are defined in the ordinance.
Okay, so community facilities
are not barred.
Okay, and then you're tying a lodge to a community facility?
It's listed in the ordinance.
In the
ordinance? It may be listed as a recreational facility, which is a community facility by the ordinance.
Okay, so
like a community
facility. I just want to learn. I'm intellectually curious, so just please bear with me, and then I'll shut it down and move on because it's not necessarily the place to be. But infrastructure shall include public facilities, community facilities. So then, might I ask, is there a definition in that ordinance code of community facilities that lists out what are community facilities and where might I find them?
In the zoning code?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of a list, but I don't. Well, yeah, there's a definition.
Okay. In the zoning ordinance, I just go in there and search it through. Now, what happens? I'm getting in the weeds here, but this is my notification. What happens if it's defined in multiple places within the zoning ordinance in multiple chapters? Does that happen? And what do we do in those situations?
There's a definition section at the very beginning of the zoning ordinance. So there should not be any other definitions elsewhere in the zoning ordinance that would use a different definition.
And then, but there could be in a different chapter that's not the zoning chapter, if you will.
Possibly, yeah. And in that case, the definition would apply to the chapter in which it's located.
Understood. Back to agenda.
I'm just going to throw out that maybe a lodge is more like a moose lodge and a gathering place and not a lodge as in a hotel kind of thing. So just say, because community recreation center things, that it could be a variation of that theme.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Meeting room.
But yeah, I don't, like, I thought you had said that there, the word lodge was in ECAP and policy 13, but not, but you're saying that you think it is via the tie to the community facility and get that. Thank you. I'd like to close this discussion. Thank you for bearing with me, because sometimes, like, you know, that was solved and made, and I'd like to be in a weird way. Okay, so next step, 5B, would like to close item number 8. We're good with 8A and 8B. And nods, open the public. Closing the public. Moving on to item number 9, subcommittee reports. Subcommittee chairs present charters to discuss. I hope to have brief discussions with the movement's board, knowing these are live documents and in the name of making us better not to get into, like, fights over the static nature of it. Is that fair? And nods. Some. Okay, so now pulling up the executive charter, I'll just put it in front of the meeting instead of me to pull it up. In there. Was it not in there? It was on the table. And I don't have it my PDF.
You need the executive committee charting?
Obviously, after practice question, so I need to know the pen to paper on this one to help guide and set the direction. And we want to be known as a collaborative that's living up to our purpose, powers, and duties. And subcommittee is supportive of this. Meetings are collaborative and informative. And there's a list of people that want to serve. That's the visionary. Like, we want to get people involved in this because we're making a difference, making the world a better place. And one get done is just set up so we have a vision and effective meetings and agendas that are flowing through. At the end of the day, more time spent on the committee before now because the committee's doing the work and we're not being caught in the weeds here. And then potential challenges and participation. Currently, Wendy Goslin speaks, I don't have that. That was a copy of the executive committee on that one. So right now, but trying to get the who is get back up. To say their email are still in there. Dr. Goslin's there. Oh, I'm talking exactly. I'm getting it mixed up in my head now. I'm really confused myself. And
let's just be clear. Yeah,
this one that has mistakes in it. So the executive charter, Karen, Michael, Carl, and Amos, and get together, have the discussion. They help guide the agenda. And so the reasons are there down at the bottom. Forgive my mistakes. Karen, Michael, did I miss anything other than confusing the calls with that?
No, that's really good.
Okay. So then closing that one and opening membership to you, Karen.
It didn't get put in the packet you received, so Liz is going to pull it up for us.
I just noticed that there's a question mark under this executive subcommittee. Desired future membership, chair of the subcommittee, to make a body of the subcommittee. Question mark. Is that a lot of questions?
No, not right now. I should not have shared this mistake. If I cleaned up later, I apologize for it. Right now, we're going to stick with it. It is a philosophical discussion that I think there are some high functioning executive committees whereby the head of each of the subcommittees serve on that. And it was a philosophical discussion, made a mistake. Do you, Karen?
No. Okay. Worries. So our charter will be showing up in a minute, but I want to thank Amos and Michael for weighing in on it. And we did have a meeting to do it, so this is not just a Karen's document. And what the frustrating thing is, we're still waiting for documents, our bylaws amendments that kind of allow us to go to work. But nevertheless, we had here she comes. So there's a strong outreach component to it that we need to be overlapping with the outreach committee about generally. And then we really need to get organized after the bylaws come in place and move forward on implementation. And Liz and I kind of need to spend some time
working on our roles for one another to make sure who's doing what in an appropriate manner. And the subcommittee membership needs to have at least an ag person or two on it. And I would be open to an outside person who is a former member of the committee or someone in another agricultural organization who can kind of have different relationships with the community who can kind of help us in the recruitment element. That's off the top of my head without reading the document, but I'm going to ask Liz if she wouldn't send it to you since it wasn't in your packet.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. And the priorities are certainly to get the ball rolling so we can have an effective group of people who want to be here, who want to participate, and to move all of our agendas forward. But I think it's all so a protocol is going to be important. But I also called out that in my opinion, as well as Amos's, that for those people who've been on this committee for many years, I would like to develop some kind of a recognition manner system, recognition way to recognize all of their years of commitment. And then maybe if that can establish into the routine as people leave the committee. And our challenges are obviously staff time and volunteer time. I think we're looking at a transition. And so once things start moving in the orderly manner that is designed to be, it'll be easier, I think, on the committee because it's going to be a load here for a little while.
I like your item two challenges.
Cultivating interest of potential applicants. Yes, that is kind of, and I think it's important to think about what's in it for people to come here at 3 o'clock on a rainy afternoon and listen to general plan documents.
That's fascinating.
Policy walks.
But that's dependent upon us to kind of as subcommittees and us here to make it interesting to ourselves and get the meaningful outcomes out to the community. And that's not just a role of the membership committee. But I think number five, I think, is really important. And that is the frustration of folks who participate in this committee and see things that don't happen after we give our advice. Or the time goes on and you've had things happen that it's kind of like, so why are we here? The Board of Supervisors doesn't pay attention on something. So anyway, that's just the frustration that some of us may feel. That's enough for today, I think.
All right. And I've just got to publicly thank Karen that does as much more work than anybody on this committee. So thank you and good job. And this is leading by example and moving us forward. So thank you.
Let's go. And so I recommendations from anybody, always on recruitment.
Going around the room. I will say that Mr. It's Copeman or Koopman?
Copeman.
Mr. Copeman, Clayton Copeman asked to be part of this committee. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so hereby that is a fourth member added. There's no outside member, so this is the committee right now. Moves forward. Good work. These are live documents, and I'll be working with Liz and get them all and get a PDF and get it posted so we have available. Okay, Liz, you have a question. I guess I should just go to my supervisor on some level about what gets us a little bit hunched in front of the line, because some of these rules and procedures and life is making me batty, not be able to kick batty Addy off this committee. Like, he's not showing up. At what point do we move on? Or do we have to wait for the newness of the rules and procedures?
Rob is also working on the bylaw changes that would allow that. I guess there are, there are two different ways we could go. We could wait for the bylaws to be updated to use that new process, or another route could be just to ask the supervisors, given the situation, to remove him since they have that
authority. I have asked the gentleman that brought him to us to ask him to resign, and I don't know that that conversation has happened, but that's the other way to go.
Okay, so we'll try and move forward on that one. Okay, then go ahead through the last charter, now moving down the list.
You'll be going down here on the agenda?
I've also been so it's not C, but going down the agenda, the discussions for Tracy.
So Tracy Farhad, is that how I say it?
Correct.
Is the applicant we looked at and interviewed her once upon a time before we had an agritourism position available. It's my understanding that Millie has expressed her desire to resign from the committee. I don't know if she's officially sent maybe an updated email to both you and to Liz.
I have not received it.
Okay. So I also did kind of remind her on what that process would be for her to send that to you, at which time she would her position would be filled with a new person when a new person is appointed by the Board of Supervisors.
So I entertain a motion on this one that we keep, you know, until Tracy, we move to approve Tracy, who put in for that, but it's my recommendation, look forward to the discussion about it, and then, but Millie stays on the board until the exact moment that the board assumes accept Tracy.
That's the way, yes, she would have, yes, it's not a vacancy until, I mean, it's not vacant until it's replaced, basically.
We don't accept the resignation.
Right.
Keep working on the points up.
Yeah, and it's actually the Board of Supervisors accepts the resignation, so we can have the resignation on the same agenda as the appointment, so they will happen at the same time.
I feel uncomfortable voting on her without her being here.
On Millie or Tracy?
Without Tracy being here.
Where did she hear some of the things?
She's been interviewed, but seems like if she's really interested in the committee, she's been.
She made a personal call just like a few others to me and said, I'm so sorry.
Okay, as long as she communicated that, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, our other applicants who are not here are Dick Quigley and Jeff Anderson. Did they call in?
Jeff did. Or he emailed and said that he wasn't able to attend.
They're on the mailing list and they're expected to come. So with that case, I would move that we recommend Tracy Farhad to take the agritourism position upon Millie's resignation.
We have a motion by Karen Sweet, second by Bob Goslin. And all in favor, say aye, and make any motion. Any opposed?
And Millie evidently expressed interest in continuing as an ex officio member to some of our committee activities. After this happened,
and very much look forward to having her as one of the outside members on the equine subcommittee. Make a note that motion passed unanimously. If I didn't already say that out loud, Daryl Sweet's moving to the accountant and livestock position, sort of a hopscotch associated with Van Yaddy's position. There's an open spot. Mr. Sweet has nodded his head in that regard. Only and Liz is going to research to make sure we're not stepping on any membership roles going back and what roles in which you have previously served. And the reason for this, we have reasonable CRT representation and knowledge coming through here. There's a huge number of acres out there. And Diana Roberts has applied to work for the Tri-Valley Conservancy and bringing in that, so the representation of TVC. Added bonus that her father is the ex-city manager of the city of Livermore, so has a planning angel on her shoulders. We're going through all this, but I think would add value to the committee.
And just for your information, Clayton also is on the California Rangeland Trust as a board member. So there's lots of trust experience, as well as past TVC board members here. So there's a very high conservation experience on this committee. The last item bullet here down for me is that Larry's is the age on him with lost to see his college to get our new appointee from there.
Okay. And then we've already recommended Mr. Quigley. That's correct. just as yeah. on the board.
That's right. His appointment and Jeff Anderson's are will be in sometime on the agenda at the board supervisor's board.
Thank you so much, Karen. And just for the record, I had a one-on-one with Dick Quigley yesterday in my morning to meet with everybody, and I did have a one-on-one with Mr. Anderson as well. And so they're both expressed interest in life and pride. Mr. Anderson reached out directly, said he couldn't be here. I thought I would, we were going to see Mr. Quigley today based on conversation yesterday, but
the last thing I called your attention, looking at the roster in the packet, it reminded me that we have two gentlemen here whose terms are, one is technically up, and that's our chairman, and Michael Frederick's term is up. Now, he must have filled a position as why it's only a year. Yeah. So their two appointments are here real, right? We're kind of in the middle of 2023, and we have one appointee, one member coming in later in 23, but it's going to be my recommendation at the next meeting that recommend their reappointment.
Is that because it took Catherine's spot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you would be fulfilling your a position, which still entitles you to two more terms. So I will recommend, make that recommendation in April.
Good. Thank you so much, Karen. Okay, moving on, Mr. Hoffies.
Yeah, this is the Advocacy Outreach and Collaboration Committee. We're kind of just getting off the ground. So we put together a charter, which I shared with the chairman and the distributed to you. One of the sort of initial things that will be my so far, we'll be heading out for is just an assessment of major organizations that impact agricultural green management, conservation in the East County area, and the degree of representation this committee has on that range groups. So that's something that I'll give you a approach to people to see, you know, what organizations they also sit on. The primary approach, one, to get that assessment, but also see where the major holes are. Are there major organizations that impact agriculture and ranching in East County that you have heard the tricks on? And this, hopefully that will feed into a membership when they look at groups and people that come in to look for those things. And then the second major issue Dr. Dodd suggested is to pick a major organization to kind of see how well we fit and how well we're represented on. And one of those, one he suggested, I think, is the idea of a regional conservation strategy that's been ongoing for multiple years in East County, but also has ties into Caltrans rather deep pockets on where they will be spending for conservation lands. So that's kind of the two-pronged approach, just an initial assessment of where we sit with the board members and how well the board is represented in the major organizations, each county, where the major goals are, feed that information back in the membership to see if we can get a lot of representation on the agencies that impact what we're up to, and to take advantage of where we are represented in a major outfit that hopefully if they keep to their charter will give you major investments in these counties. You can get sufficient significant representation in that area. Sure. So that's where, you know, really early stage. That's the plan for next year.
And I think that's awesome. I think that the collaboration continues to move forward. So thank you for that work. Any questions for Bill?
Anybody wants to join?
Anybody wants to party?
I'm not sure if the regional conservation investment strategy is a document that California CBF was produced and adopted, but it's not an organization. So I know that Caltrans and other places, that other entities that need to mitigate will find
that is
that plan, but how
that's a, there's the book. That plan went together and identified high priority areas for mitigation.
Right.
So that exists in that plan is used as a planning document. So, you know, and the people that are following up on that, particularly Caltrans and other entities that need mitigation, hopefully will refer to that planning
And that's and that information is available to them.
But it was never adopted by the board of chiefs. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And there was some of it that had some real objections to it. Like she and I both, there's no grazing element in it. So there's a lot of talk about protection of CPS and whatever I could talk about like that. All of which, first of all, after this is said, need grazing to be able to maintain the habitat. Well, they put the planet together, you and I and a bunch of others, said, well, then you need to also figure out how you're going to be grazing on this planet. Then they're just preserving it, you know, figure out how to manage it. This wildlife service would never come to the table and say, people are going to plan. Other parts of this wildlife service support the idea of management, but the particular staff that wrote this did the same thing as that person. So it's all about preservation, but it really doesn't talk about management. And if you don't set up the management control, which we have done on the mitigation ground, even without this plan, but that was the hang up. That's why I got buried. You're getting used to it as a guide if they don't break.
We talked about the desalinated county conservation strategy in like 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
Not the regional conservation investment strategy, which is fairly new.
Yeah, and it sounds like local ordinance or local policy could be federal to RCIS. Is that correct?
Well, it's hard to tell the agencies who require something agent.
Right.
What they ought to require.
Right.
They don't like that. Even though they probably need it, but they don't like it. And so that's the problem I see in having a local program is that we can do all the decide where all the rules should be here. But if the agencies that require the mitigation don't want to incorporate those into their plans, then my question is what we've done.
I think it'd be good to review the RCIS. Have you gotten through the whole document?
Oh yeah.
Okay. And so I've read it. It does seem like a guidance. And with that being the case, you know, maybe part of our obligation and our effort can be directed towards government with blanks and they seem to do that.
Sorry, great, thank you very much. And I think the point of this is an early seat to the table if we're moving through this so we can actually try and have to implement and put in go through, right? I think it's not easy, but if you're not at the table and come in later, you'll have to write through. What the right voice, right? I don't want to be a support mechanism whereby the representative may see what they are and may rational, centrist, pragmatic people, you know, seize the day, because if you don't manage it that way, you can't choose, you know, so. Good stuff. Thank you, Mr. Puppies. And next, land use ag enhancement. This is anemic in comparison to the work that I'm asking all of y'all to do. So, and this one needs some work, and this is a key piece. But again, today is the direction of all health guide, direction of policy for land use support for the start of foods. Ensure all parties are represented at the table, all stated, help provide clarity on what is possible in all of the relevant land use destinations, and to stimulate agritourism, thus enhancing agriculture. And this one not very well fleshed out, but again, play a lead role to help to envision, adopt, and implement policy in support of our purpose, powers, and duties. Committee work will be ESCOM help to set the agenda in the direction of AAC. So I'm overlapping it a little bit. Need to do more work here. But just get this subcommittee to figure the best ways of working and have the right rangeland management, the right agritourism, the right enhancements to move forward. And the participation, who it is. So the current membership, desired future membership, party, Mr. Sweet said yes. Mr. Norton said no because he's holding his own. I put Schneider as a possibility for this land use and underlying Goslin. You should be, Mr. B. Miller should be on there in terms of that. So there's been some juggling around in this one in terms of how it's going to land. So right now, B. Miller's there, Wendy's there. Goslin is actually there, he's nodded in, Sweet is there, and Norton's not. So it's just trying to build the foundation, and frankly, I've been working more on the committee structure for everybody else than my own. And I know you've got a lead from the front as well, so I intend to continue to evolve this as we go.
It's a good place for the new land trust.
Right, and then we've got CRTN, TVC, and any other questions, comments to me? I will continue to make that better. Now, both of my documents and board have typos and corrections are in effect, so not that. Me, I'm full five.
And you got a little one.
Okay, right. Okay, solar policy. Mr. North expresses his regret that he cannot be here. I know there's been some robustness upon which I've been copied with Mr. as well as Mr. Fredericks and Mr. Schneider. And so on this one, Mr. Fredericks, do you have any advice about how to proceed?
Well, I like Larry's comment at the executive committee that we should arrive at a consensus, not necessarily voting on them. I think the document should really be giving a mission and not aiming at results as it does in places. I'm also not sure, you know, the solar committee was sort of a temporary committee that did something, produced a result, and what are we doing now? And that's the question I don't have an answer for right now. And I think, you know, it's not an email discussion, it's an in-person discussion. And so that's kind of where I am right now. We've exchanged a lot of email. They've gotten very long and convoluted. We've got a packet item with our charter in here, which is kind of the first one I've seen that says, okay, this is actually what it's supposed to be. And we need to have an in-person meeting, get some of these differences ironed out, and really get a better mission statement.
Thank you. Dalton, you're going on that chain.
Yeah, I've been on the chain.
Just to be clear, there's been zero meetings where everyone's together. I came out and said, let's start with email, or did you all get together? Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember if we had a Zoom meeting or not at the very beginning of the adult
community. Got it. We had a Zoom meeting. And so what's happening is, you know, I believe the chair of that subcommittee has recognized that there's this issue of structure. And the last email we received, I think, was from Sam, and said that, we'd be meeting and the charters and the adapting document. So any of the issues that have been brought up by Mr. Frederick would be addressed.
I don't have a big argument with many of the points in what's there. I just don't think we should get into the position where we're almost acting as a zoning agency and finding what can be built and what can't be built.
So the envision is meant to envision a future that's different than the current future. And so that's where it shows up to me, right, is in that envision piece. Now, whether people agree that the agrivoltaic racks are recognized as structural fact, or whether you agree with that or not, like, that's a fair one. But if that's somebody's vision, to me, that's not a fellow policy. That's just setting a future intention. And I don't, it seems like not everyone is aligned to that, because I read those emails and went through. And then so that's to a discussion point of Jack has the luxury and liberty of leading these discussions going forward.
And that's the statement I have an issue with. I look at that as zoning policy. And, what can be built, what a structure is, where the structures can be, what they can house and not house. That's not the scope of the solar committee.
So then I also just agree with you going back. I tried to dissolve this one and roll it under Randy's at the last meeting and said no, and Jack said, no, I want to take this and roll it forward. I said, good, because I had asked when I first got here and had no idea what's going on. I still agree, what is the purpose? What is the role of the AAC as it relates to development of solar policy? When does our role end and where does it go? and then different people with different opinions. But I want to like complete things and say, okay, that's a check. And I know it's ongoing. So I agree with you a little bit of what is the role Mr. Fredericks, Jack took it. The chairs of these subcommittees are responsible for helping to move this forward. I made sure he put draft up there just because you guys clearly didn't codify, you didn't codify it, and then it brought up for good cause the non-AAC members voting or non-voting. Now, let's build towards consensus, have the right discussion, we're going to be that much more powerful, but it forced the issue that we're saying, okay, non-AAC members may vote if when it comes to it. But I also think I didn't do a good enough job of explaining that charters are live documents. Like, this is the end-all, be-all. This is, Jack's not here, so it's ongoing.
Yeah, and to put a perspective on, you know, our role, we have been involved with definitions, changing the zoning ordinance, so that is what we do. That is in our purpose, powers, and duties to take the lead on laws.
I'm going to say our purpose, powers, and duties are exactly what they say, and I have nowhere to say take the lead, but it says to lean in on it, yes.
So the solar subcommittee previously did a lot of work and did work with our Albert Lopez, our planning director, in developing a policy. And I admit I'm not sure exactly where that stands right now. There is a draft solar policy. So I can check with Albert, and I think it would be good to have some communication between the subcommittee and Albert as to where the solar policies stand and what they currently contain. I believe they may be waiting for a CEQA review, but I can check with on that. That there is this, you know, there is a document. So I think there needs to be some communication between the solar subcommittee and what's happening at the staff level, to make sure that there's some, not that you all have to agree, but that there's some at least progression down the same path, even if there's not complete agreement.
Amen. And that's part of the goal, or that's part of what's the rest on the edge of this committee, because as I understood there at one point, it's like, no, Albert has its own solar subcommittee, has nothing to do with the AAC. I would want to be like, let's dissolve it. Let Albert do it. It's gone to the director because we've already done our job. Now, if we haven't done our job, then let's keep it here. Let's keep you all on board. I don't still know the answer to this. A little bit conflicting based on what we're hearing. That's number one. Number two is, can you please communicate to Mr. Lopez that if he chooses to meet with the solar subcommittee before meeting with the chair of the AAC, I will be disappointed. And that, to me, undermines the structure to the point that you might get a resignation. Shouldn't threaten that ever, but that just doesn't feel good. But we very much look forward to that. But that's part of what should be shown up. Where is this solar policy? What's the point of doing all the work? We spent countless hours. What's the point of doing all this work that's going to sit on Albert's desk? I'm not saying that it is. I'm not saying that it's not. But where is it, and how do we keep trying to hold
it? Well, the soil ordinance is the same thing.
Yeah. The E-point CUP is the same thing. Yeah. All of it's the same thing. Now, what I'm saying is I'm not going to sit by and not at least go loudly on, this is not how the government is supposed to function. This is not how this stacked constitution, democratic republic, is supposed to function. If we the people, as first among equals, why are we showing up?
I think the Board of Supervisors' goal was for him to return with something for them in March. Respond to
the last, like anything else, it's like the litter. It's not popular to do those things. The easiest thing to do is to do nothing.
I get it, and that's where I'm at least going to be waving the flag if this doesn't feel right and this is unright. And we're codified in this thing, we're supposed to be doing this stuff.
Yes, by coincidence, on Monday, I wrote to planning director Lopez and asked, what's the status? When I had asked him that question in January, that he was looking for a CEQA consultant to do CEQA analysis of proposed zoning amendment based on what the Board of Supervisors direction had given him last summer. I have gotten a reply, so I don't know if he's hired somebody or if somebody has been hired and is still working on it, and when some kind of a CEQA
notice of preparation or initial study will be made public. Let me just go back and say, this former solar subcommittee worked hard. We had weekly, at least at the end of it, we had weekly meetings, hours at a time, with staff support, and we made a very detailed set of recommendations to amend the 2018 solar framework, or whatever it was called, that was a term of that document.
Yeah,
had lots of policies and definitions and things in it, and that was largely ignored by when Bruce Jensen retired and Director Lopez took it over. Then he convened a separate committee, a working group that was called with some representatives of industry and representatives of the AAC. And then we had a public forum, and he made his own synthesis of the results of all those things and presented it to the Board of Supervisors. It was not at all like the policy matrix, I think that's what it was called, the matrix, that we had spent too many hours to count working on.
Right, and I was at that one, and then the breakout rooms too, there were no recording of that, right? And that and like our what was said in our breakout room was not what was reported back. And then like so the whole thing just didn't make me feel good about the process. That said, it is what it is. So now I just want to be able to support moving things forward, support the work that's been done, or else why are you spending that time? Now, I'm not saying I'm good at it, I'm not saying I'm going to succeed at it, but at least I know I'm not going to go quietly.
I mean, Carl, in going forward, what do you think the solar committee can really do?
I think we need our chairman to be here on that one. I tried to dissolve. I am the chairman. We get subcommittee chairman to be there. I tried to dissolve it last time because I don't know what it's going to be. He wanted to keep it. You said I want to be on it. So yeah. Why would you be on something that, you know?
Well, because I did think about it a lot.
There will be public response to whatever the proposal is that goes to the board, to transportation planning. And so it's kind of like we are a public body with some knowledge who should be prepared to comment on what comes
forward. Well, and that may be the only thing that we can do at this point. I mean, The previous committee really had a target goal that, you know, they wanted to come up with this recommendation that was going to go to the Board of Supervisors. Now, you know, what's the goal?
Knowledgeable response.
Okay. So I've got to table this because the chair is not here, and there's only a certain amount of what we should do. So table by my own.
Okay.
So equine.
Yeah, the one subcommittee meeting. So it's a long charter. I'll paraphrase it. So the reason the charter is long is because this a committee actually started over 20 years. Early after the advisory committee was formed. And it did a great body of work at that time with participation by 50, combination of 50 officials and representatives of different organizations, including the OCD. Karen had a significant role. I was a member of the BZA at the time, and so I was participating in citizen. And Millie was still representing the Ag Advisory Committee.
In my absence from the room, I'm powered off the Goblins to be chair for this moment. And be quick, be brief with this.
Okay, so I'm going to be very quick with this. Regarding the charter of the committee, our intent is to go back to the work that was done 20 years ago and essentially start it up. That work was approved by the Board of Supervisors, and a reference document was created. Now, in that regard, so our charter is to return to that work. Our vision for 2027 is to facilitate an increase in the equestrian facility metrics that are consistent with the two enhanced agriculture and agricultural lands, as the term is defined by the previous solar subcommittee. We want to develop policy to integrate the horse industry into trails and agritourism objectives of the area, and facilitate outreach to the cattle industry to promote common values. We also want to facilitate outreach to other organizations in the area. I've already started working on that by giving support to a equestrian group that's forming in the area. Our immediate goals are to work with the equine permit streamlining project. Our goal was to form a technical advisory committee, and this charter was put together. That's being completed. We're also working on mediation and developed a sort of understanding of a conflict that exists on Doolin Road in Alameda County. So we have that understanding. Our next step is to do outreach, gain information about the problem, and then come back to this committee, hopefully at our next meeting, to ask for direction about what we do. We'll be dealing with various agencies and departments within the county, and more importantly, to work with composting groups, since that issue is starting to come to the forefront of other organizations. Let's see, and that's probably what's most significant about that. Again, we have formed a technical advisory committee that will be addressing issues of zoning and definitions. And then we have a separate mediation committee. That's about it for that. Yes.
What is the issue on your room road?
It's an issue regarding manure management, which would be property.
Sorry, I'm going to suggest that if you're interested in tying in with the county's compost and it's not called recycling, but the required composting element, now might be the time to move in to have a bring them by forcing them into that program.
Great, thank you.
Depends on that.
You're alluding to the SB 1383?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have specific contact? Yeah. Okay.
Where are we?
Just finished the
question. Sure. All the way through.
Yeah.
With the charter, any other items that you want to touch on? Or
no, we kind of integrated the two.
To answer a question on why, yes, and conflicts. The advisor work with cities, counties, government, special interest groups, and individuals concerning conflict between agriculture, department of purpose, powers, and duties. Okay, on to urban ag. Oh, this is why he was in the.
I saw him up on the screen.
Can those people talk at all?
I just saw Mr. Weiss and committee member Weiss been on Zoom, but as a viewer, yeah, as a panelist, the answer I believe is no, we're not able, we're not doing any panelists. Not true.
Right, we don't have any way to project.
So, Mr. White, I'm assuming you can hear that, maybe, if you're still on, but we cannot let you speak at this juncture. There's no hybrid in this.
How about your phone?
Making comment that needs a bigger bump?
Not on there.
Okay. Go ahead.
Going through those two at this one. So, looking at the urban ag charter, has everyone had a chance to review that? Develop technical policy recommendations to enhance ag lands, the public education, subcommittee. Yeah, so I'm going to just like say thank you, Mr. White, for being here, of getting that pen to paper. Jennifer, did you work with him on that, or did you do that?
He was mostly him on that one.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm not disputing the bringing in of the topic social and environmental justice, but is that innate in our bylaws and ordinance to cover that, or now we can just expect that's going to be part of everything we do in our life, even if it's not written.
Food security is part of that, the social environmental justice, and food grows where water flows in the agricultural setting, and that's my tie that makes me at peace.
So we just might need to clarify as a committee, kind of like why,
the environmental justice factor in.
Yeah, especially looking back at our farming language, those people are concerned about it.
Does gardening become farming? But that's the urban overlay, right? At the end of the day, you look at the rise and fall of every civilization that we can look at from a historical standpoint, and the less the common person knew about their food supply, the quicker the fall of the civilization. So it's something we should teach our kids. So that's why, but Darren, if we should be in it, don't be in it.
So I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying we need to be clear about it and be able to explain it.
Well, Well, I'll tell you one good reason to include the EJ is that when it comes to the general plan update, this will be the committee that can look at that element. So there'll be a functionality that'll hold. So we know that that in and of itself is going to be of great value.
So that also ties in then to the worker housing that was, I just saw some close to.
That one, I don't know where it was heading.
Here on one of our documents.
Well, that was part of housing. But that was part of the general plan update, which is really the house.
Yes. I mean, we have things are not just about certain plants and animals.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Good on that one.
Carl, yes. A couple of quick things. So, 2011 definition of American Planning Association by American Planning Association for Urban Ag, the production, marketing, distribution of food in and around cities can be for profit or nonprofit. There's some implications here in public education mentioned, the commons mentioned, and there might have been a third one I didn't underline, of nonprofit, not just for profit. And so just wanted to highlight that as something that may be something for this committee and or the subcommittee to consider within the charter. And then also the concept of diversified ag systems as the efforts of, I think, this larger committee ultimately leading towards an ebb and flow in efforts between ag and peri-urban, urban ag and peri-urban ag. So just something to think about. And yes, the farm worker housing element is part of the housing element effort.
Okay, so when you were talking about this committee, were you referring to the Urban Ag Subcommittee or the this AAC?
I have them flow between both, but I think it's actually including some reference to nonprofit because many of the urban ag groups in the county are nonprofits in this charter may make some sense. And I think first the subcommittee could probably consider that and then where it goes from there and will be determined based on that.
Will you, Jennifer, will you take that message to Mr. White?
I will.
Thank you. And you have good. You got it. Okay, moving to trails.
Trail subcommittee is, first of all, let's go with the chair of that committee. So right now, I help set up the committee because of being approached by the two very knowledgeable citizens that wondered what was up with trails down in the county. And so I helped them get the committee started, but have been looking for another chair to take over. It turns out that Dick Quigley has agreed to take over the chairmanship position of that committee. And, one more reason for facilitating approval of these people. So that we can have that diverse representation of our committees. That being said, the reason for existence is to review the existing plan. Turns out the plans go back 50 years for linked trail systems in Alameda County. We haven't fulfilled those, and the knowledge that came forward from these citizens is that the reason it hasn't been fulfilled is the variety of jurisdictions that have to be involved with one trail crossing the county. And there are other issues involved with that, but the tendency has been for trail plans to be aspirational rather than to be implemented. Funding obviously is a big concern, especially when you're expanding jurisdictions. And so there's been some initial talk about starting to use CEQA a little bit more aggressively, potential for agrivoltaics, mitigation funding, just entering sort of the system and how that fits with the RCIS strategy. I really have no idea, but there are potential funds there. Mentioned the regional conservation investment strategy. A different type of jurisdiction has potentially been set up, which is a community services district, something I learned about from Supervisor Miley. And, facilitating more delivered, more intensive agriculture area of the land, not necessarily facilitating it, but pointing out the potential for trail research being developed in that area is another thing that we can focus on as a funding mechanism because of the bonus parcel program. So otherwise, pretty much consistent with this committee, we want to enhance agriculture and agricultural land by recognizing that those lands are multifunctional, it's not just focused on one use. That being the case, we've identified three specific projects that we hope to have implemented by 2027 and being on the pathway to be implemented. Those have been discussed with this committee before. We're also going to look at nearby project ready trails and then start identifying aspirational trails that have support of the community. And we're already receiving contact regarding those types of aspirational trails. Our goals and strategies for 2023 are moving forward. We've already had a very significant meeting that had representation for the city of Livermore with a promise of continued representation. The committee is working on its organizational structure. We are working on specific work plans. And what we're discovering is that there's remarkable community support for the concept of developing regional trails and going in those trail linkages that have been identified. Our challenges are going to be, the uncertainty of dealing with property owners, the uncertainty of various types of groups that find issues with the trails being developed. We can't identify what those issues are, but it's status quo in Allegheny County where there'd be problems with any sort of advantages. Funding is going to be a big issue. And that's about it for the charter. As far as the progress we've made, I mentioned the meeting that we had with representatives from the city of Livermore. That was kind of the best meeting to gauge the response of officials to our concept. We found that response was remarkably positive. And so it's encouraging for further outreach. So we plan on reaching out to other city of Livermore officials, as well as East Bay Regional Park District officials, gaining support, identifying those specific trails that have been targeted, and starting to bring in supporting organizations that already exist in Alameda County and trail agenda. That's it.
So what kind of trails are we talking about? Just equestrian, or are we talking about bike trails or hiking trails?
Multifunctional trails and, put in places where they're appropriate.
Could
you
clarify that?
What would
it be? At first I thought, oh yeah, this paved in the Millie and the horses, and back to Vision 2010, we talked about
right.
All kinds of trail uses, but it'd be good if it was included in here in the thing
that
trail for multiple
sure.
Uses.
Yeah, I can relay that.
And I have a question. Did you discuss motorized vehicles?
No, but that's a big issue I expect to be coming up. And so we haven't addressed that. I've been familiar with the Sierra Club policy and the work that she's done on it. And, where we go with that was going to be, as a result of a pretty long conversation. So that is
your question.
What is it? Yeah, their policy is a motorized vehicle, a motorized vehicle. And
that aren't part of the trails and stuff,
right?
So then we should formulate a point of view on some level going forward out of this joint.
Well, I suspect we will.
Does that mean an e-bike is a motorized vehicle?
By mine,
yeah, it would consider that if that's the direction we go. We may not want to go that direction, and certainly, there are handicapped individuals that, are not going to be able to get out on the trails. They don't have the motorized
vehicle. Or older people who can't.
Absolutely. So again, considering that.
Environmental justice.
Right. And also considering, potentially regulating those folks that get out of control. And because there is a lot of power in the e-bikes. And so my experience has been that there isn't. A 750-watt e-bike is not comparable to a mountain bike. And so, equating the two and figuring out how you're going to protect the environment and not
well, I don't want to extend this, but a 70-year-old on a 750-watt e-bike and a 21-year-old on a mountain bike probably are kind of equivalent.
Well, that could be the case, yeah. But again, it's one of the things that should be discussed. We don't necessarily envision that the Ag Advisory Committee is going to be setting up rules for operations for East Bay Regional Park District or, you know, Livermore or Regional Park District. We can certainly wait.
Sarah, certainly jump in. We have got over 7 minutes from the time. Thank you. Is this under the purview? Do we understand? Does anybody not understand or not think that what this charter is about should be under the purview of the AAC?
I mean, we didn't have all these other issues. The concept is clear that the things are nice. But if they don't mix very well, the one thing.
Well, actually, it's been recognized that trails that are multifunctional uses are more likely to be approved by the community because those organizations come together and would rather like trails than not.
I think so. This committee makes a tie to the agricultural working landscape tie. This is not an urban recreational committee.
Yeah, I think the motorbikes are, you know, mountain bike, and I don't know that back in any issue, that would be a conversation.
I don't think the parts on day in question. No, I support
it. I would think value, you know, the equestrian industry as part of agriculture, you know, they need to have somebody to go.
Right.
So if you say, okay, well, before you have equestrian-friendly trails throughout your community, the more you're going to support that agricultural industry, the fewer equestrians are going to support market.
Initially, I thought this was to help encourage and tie into our equine industry to give them access to go places. And so it was a perfect idea, too. So we don't have,
but that's ongoing, right? And so is it under a purview? Should it be? There's an agritourism piece of the connectivity, the line of the connectivity, right. You know, and so there, and any of the bonus density subdivision stuff, those plans have to be in alignment with a regional trail policy and incorporation. And some of that bonus density stuff, especially in South Valley, will be necessary in order to enable the success of agriculture. Thus, it's going to come back at it, but should it be in this room? I'm still not sure. It is. I set it up, supported, had it there. But I just want like, us to continue to have that discussion because panel of experts to enhance ag and preserve our resources. Paraphrase, not quoted there.
Yeah, and there is. There is a transition in, you know, what's considered to be agriculture. I mean, the term multifunctional agriculture is popping up more and more and more, and specifically in writings about the peri-urban environment. It's recognized that recreation is one of those uses. In fact, the regional map that was put together by Dan Busting, I think his name is, it actually has a recreational scale on it for every rural property in Edmonton. And I certainly think it's a valuable conversation to keep there. But as an equestrian fellow, one of the things I can say is that if we lost the opportunity for multifunctional trails that serve the horse industry, because they also serve hikers and bicycles, be remarkably disappointed because you'd be eliminating that resource for the horse.
Well, being I'm not a big horse, maybe go away or say, not just begging the question,
right?
But I think it is a valid one. I would like to close item number 9 and open item number 10. Well, first off, I just need to say that I'm not sure that Mr. Quigley is 100% in alignment that he wants to take that gavel on something in the chair right away.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable. I don't know enough. I'm sure I should want to say that, but maybe go before the evolution. Item 10, chairman updates at this juncture have none. Going around the committee members, anything for the good of the order?
Have we decided what time we're going to start in the future and where we're going to start?
Yes. Well, at the last meeting, there was a kind of a divided opinion. There seemed to be a lot of people leaning towards starting at 6 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock. So as the committee met for a long time at 7 o'clock. So we have reserved the our old meeting room at the Public Works Building up on Gleason Drive here in Dublin.
That what you know was set up and the SBA was set up.
What's that?
The SBA was
yeah,
set up.
Yeah.
Got it.
By the animal shelter. And it for a start time of 6 o'clock. So we can kind of see how it goes and maybe adjust if necessary, but unless there are objections, that's where the meeting will be next time, starting at 6 p.m. And bringing supper and eating in the meeting is probably okay. People don't need to do that.
What's that?
I was just saying, it's a room in which your bag lunch would be acceptable then. Yeah, that's true. It's basically the public works staff break room. So yeah, it's informal.
Does that mean I can
wine?
Oh, where's the okay, anything else on Dollar?
I'm gonna
be another. Anybody else?
I want to thank the two staff ladies that are here for all their work with all these handouts. Yeah.
That was a lot.
Thank you all so much. I love the feedback. I have a lot in, and I appreciate you showing up. Alex, there.
I just wanted to say we are moving, or we're trying to move toward hybrid meetings. It's difficult off-site, but we hope to be able to. But because of state law, which I've mentioned earlier and I can mention again in the future, committee members have to show up in person regardless, unless you jump through a bunch of hoops.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I think you're in.